Welcome back to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's political commentary.
Yes, it is. And we've got Lara Greaves on the line. Morena.
Morena.
How are you?
Pretty good. Trying to fight a phone addiction in an election year, though. That's probably not a sensible thing. Maybe I'll leave it till December.
A phone addiction?
You know, like when you just say, oh, too addicted to your phone, but then you're like, oh, no, it's my job.
Oh, my gosh, yes. I feel that.
Yeah. It's quite annoying. Yeah, I was just reading an article on ABC about it on my phone, ironically. And going, okay, I need to cut that one out. Thanks, ABC.
Yeah, tricky. Lots to talk about in the world of politics, though.
Yeah, NZ First Conference. What's happening there? What went down?
Well, at first I was like, what is this? Is this their conference or their convention? But, of course, they've kind of done that already. This is their launch. So they're launching their campaign, which is quite far out with delay. So it was quite interesting because it's normally people launch about 3 months out from the election, which would be a month, still next month. So I think we can expect to see more launches next month. But basically, they got this drop convention centre in Manukau, and was apparently seats about 800-900 people, and only half filled it, which is quite concerning for them. Because, you know, like, the thing is now, you want a full crowd, and especially if you're a populist, you like to talk about your crowd size. You know, we've seen Trump go on and on about his crowd size. So
size matters if you're a populist.
Yeah, it does.
And you can kind of gaslight the public and say, oh, my crowd was this big and all that kind of thing. And so you can't really do that when everyone knows the size of the venue and it's half full.
Maybe if they sorted out the cost of living crisis, there would have been more people in seats, because it was $2.95 to attend the whole weekend. Like, that's steep these days.
Yeah, and look, they said, especially because most of them have been with their super gold cards, you know, like over 65. So pensioners, you know, that's not, don't necessarily are that loaded. But one thing there was people did say that the parking also cost money. But it just kind of, it's a bit weird when you're starting to talk about, yeah, the costs of attending a campaign launch versus like, you know, that's why there's not that many people there. So if that's the case, then you need to set it up so there will be a full house and so you do look like a happening party. And then, you know, we've seen a lot of media pieces as well about the launch and around, like, how many people that New Zealand First have stolen from other parties, or, like, actually, I guess stolen isn't actually the right word. It's mainly people who've kind of, their careers have ended and they've been a member of the other party and then left that party and then joined New Zealand First. And it was quite a lot. It was like 6 or 7 when there was a piece on staff. So quite a lot of people have left and joined New Zealand First. I have to say, though, it's like, to be a bit brutal, it's not like the finest names in politics by a far stretch. You know, it's very much not the best, you know, it's not the best and brightest at all. You know, you don't go through them and go, wow, yeah, that person was known for being really good. So it's not good. I mean, like, you want, to some extent, you expect some defections to New Zealand First because of some kind of issue, and it might be that someone's had one little issue in the party and, you know, they've gone off or whatever it was, or like they stood up for their morals and values and they've gone to New Zealand First. That would be understandable. But again, this is like, because Winston Peters and Shane Jones are both defectors to New Zealand First. You know, that's how the party started, and that's how Shane Jones ended up there, from defecting from Labor. This lot are not people who anyone kind of called a future prime minister. So we've got a situation where New Zealand First is a party of a whole bunch of like people who've been in politics. They did not distinguish themselves, and here they are. And so that's been a big one. The other one was Shane Jones made some creepy comments about Luxon and others getting out their knee pads for the Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi, which was a bit gross and weird, and everyone's been condemning. And then there was an announcement of $1 billion for, like, just more energy exploration, you know, going and finding another coal seam or some offshore drilling and that kind of thing, you know, like just a classic kind of drill baby drill type policy there. So that was the main highlight issue for them.
Interesting. I just had a question about what you said before about it being quite early for people to launch their campaigns, because I know that the Greens are starting to sort of rally and launch campaigns as well. Is it is it typical that people in opposition launch their campaigns a bit earlier than those who are already in government? Like, is this going to cause more division between New Zealand First and the rest of the coalition now that they've sort of fully launched into campaign mode quite early?
Well, it's strange because we have a regulated period of 3 months around our elections where that's where the spending is regulated. There's like a different change in donation law. Like that's when the public servants, like I think they have to shut up initially, but they've got to shut up even more. You know, like there's a point there where Parliament rises for the year. I think that's not till September though. And basically that's when you're in full campaign mode, where Parliament rises and that people aren't going doing their normal MP stuff. So we kind of expect it to be later in the year in this long campaign. I can't see it being very popular with the public, especially when you look at places like Australia that have, like, six-week campaigns. I can't imagine that people will be like, yay, more campaign. The launch itself, though, kind of does mark the start of a campaign. I mean, you'll see that the parties have been announcing policy gradually, but the campaign launch indicates they're in campaign mode. And, yeah, it wasn't a great one for them. It wasn't one of those things where you look at it and go, oh, like, they're going to make New Zealand great again, you know, like that kind of thing where it's like there's energy and a whole thing going on. I think, campaign launches in recent years that have been a lot more vibing. I'm not sure if what that ACT Party one was as well. Again, it's really kind of, you can call them whatever you want. It's just really an event with a bunch of your members where you get media. Like, that's the idea, is that you grab the media over the weekend and then you featured a little bit on maybe a bit of Q&A, and then, you know, people are talking about you on Monday. I think that's the aim of them.
Yeah, and all for the low, low price of $2.95. You can watch Crash and Burn and Drill Baby Drill. Okay, disappointing turnout. Let's pivot a little and talk about this employment leave bill. There's a couple of proposed changes, and the Greens and Labor, not happy about it.
That's another concerning one. I mean, I think at the moment the zone is well and truly flooded, and so it's hard for us to all know what to pay attention to. But I think high employment or precarious employment, it's worth paying attention to this one. So basically, the bill is kind of going to its second reading. It's likely to pass in a very similar form to what it is now, before the election. And Labor have said that they're going to repeal it or work on it. But we have to remember, they've got a lot to do when they get in. They've got a lot of laws to revert back, you know, like that's quite a bit that they've got to do in there. So basically, if you're a part-time worker, you'll get kind of prorated part-time sick pay rather than like the normal kind of 2 weeks that people get. And that's a particular concern, like off the bat, they flip it as a concern for women who tend to do more household, domestic care, and then like with sick kids and that, you know, like if you're part-time and you've only got 7 days a week, as a year of sick leave, you're going to burn through that very, very quickly with small children. That's just like a clear fact of life. But also you've got to think about other people in part-time work, disabilities, might have reasons why they're part-time, other than just that general economic precarity. And there's other stuff there as well around, like, it's based on that annual leave and sick leave will be based on the amount of hours that you're, like, scheduled to work or to work in your contract rather than the number of hours that you work. You know, some people have those jobs where they end up working more, and actually that their annual leave or sick entitlement should be more based on the actual hours worked. Labor and the Greens are saying that this is a recipe for people burning out, basically workers burning out, because, you know, like, we all know that we need rest. We're not getting as much rest as we could. You know, even the start of our conversation today, bloody cell phones, we're not getting as much rest as we should. And so it's like this recipe of modern life where people are a bit overworked, and this bill doesn't really help that.
Oh, late-stage capitalism strikes again.
Yeah, well, you know, at a point, what point do the workers all riot, you know? It's probably, we're probably not getting not too far from it, surely.
You reckon? Yeah. Are we on the brink of revolution?
Well, you know, AI.
Yeah.
It's gonna take a lot of jobs.
It's interesting to see, you know, this coalition government getting those final jabs in as it gets closer and closer to the election. There's like, what's one more thing that we can leave for potentially, if there is a change in government, for them to have to revert?
Yeah. And, like, credit where credit's due there. They did get a lot through, but they were the highest use of urgency, like, of any government we've ever had. I think Labor was criticised a lot, and they're in the, on around 20-something percent, that last Labor government. And this lot are in the 50s.
Wow, damn.
Which is just ridiculous, because you think about it, there's not even the opposition on record, really, the full opposition from interest groups and stakeholder groups and communities on record to the problems with the bills, which then makes it even harder to repeal, because if you're sitting there and, like, I was, you know, like, I was looking today at Rachel Brooking, who's, like, this lawyer and this, like, Labor Party spokesperson for the RMA reform. I'm thinking, looking at those people, like, okay, just saying I'm going to redraft a bit around that. There's this other bad law where they're taking iwi out of the council agreements, and I was just trying to get up to speed on it this morning. But it's like, she's like, okay, well, this was the bits I would redraft. And it's like, wow, someone can just sit there and, like, redraft fixes to some of this legislation. Because it's hard to, you can't really wholesale repeal a lot of these acts, because the original act needed updating anyway. So it's like, oh, this is such an exercise. Maybe we do get AI to do this, but honestly. But it's like, come on, team. Like, you just think about it, if you do then have a situation where Labor gets in with the Greens and a bit of Te Pāti Māori or Opportunity or whoever it ends up being, you're then going to have to go through and repeal a bunch of stuff. You've only got a three-year term, and it's going to be really hard to then stand there and say, oh, we fixed a bunch of things.
Yeah.
Like, it's not going to be a positive 3 years for the left either. So we're really in bleak times. That's all I have to say. That's all I've got today.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. I mean, I guess to finish us off on the same note, the actification of Paul Henry.
Okay, but is it the actification? Because some of the old clips that have been drawn up, like, of him being so unbelievably racist on live television, like, I can't believe that guy got a platform for such a long time. And I should be less biased, but, like, Jesus.
Yeah, it's a chicken or the egg thing, eh? Like, did he help create the environment for which this kind of populism thrives? You know, or did, like, they create him? Yeah, did they actify him, or did he actify them, right? Like, that's that kind of thing. And he's going to be a really interesting one. I have something positive to say, though, about Paul Henry. Positive.
Do you?
Yeah, positive note. Yeah, so the thing is he's coming into Parliament with a lot of power. He's 65, he's got tons of money, like, he's got tons of grandkids. He's at that point in life where he could, like, he didn't have much to give earlier, much care to give, and now he's really a care to give, right? Because he's just, like, at that age, got all the things, he's all good, he's sorted, right? And so now we've got this guy who has been outspoken. He's going into a political party that's been traditionally very tight, very, like, disciplined, very whipped, very together, and whipped is the technical term, you know, like, how political parties stick together. They have a whip that makes sure that they only vote a certain way and make sure that they, you know, toe the party line and all of that. They literally have someone called a whip or a musterer if you're the Green. And so it's like the situation where we've got this guy who, yeah, is not going to be able to be... Doesn't he literally have a book called Untamed? I feel like he literally has a book called Untamed.
That sounds true. Look.
Oh, like, no.
One of my family members had it and it was called Untamed. But, you know, like, no one's going to tame him, and he's literally going to go into Parliament. He's going to go up against this leader in caucus that has been incredibly tamed, and he's going to be able to say whatever he wants. And so I think that's a positive thing for our political system, even though he'll probably say some stuff that we disagree with, because... Our political system, one of the problems is all of the MPs are so restrained and constrained in what they can do and say. And I think that actually restricts some really good people from going in and opposing, or, like, being Labor left, for example. You know, like, that means people can't go in and like, being, I think, like, leaning Green and Nats, you know. They have created space for their Blue Greens, but not enough space to really speak out against the party's direction. So I'm trying to spin this one as a positive thing, even though he's likely to try and say all sorts of funny, ridiculous things that's going to make a lot of people roll their eyes and, like, maybe hurt some people's well-being. But, like, overall, there's a possibility that he will make us question some bits of the system.
Shake things up a bit.
Yeah, shake things up in terms of, not constitutionally, but, like, under, you know, what's under the hood there, that shake things up, like, the way that we do, the way we do our system.
Okay. Fascinating. Interesting perspective.
Mm.
Yeah. It's too easy to criticise him. This is the thing. So.
Well, that's the thing. You know, is he going to become a bit of a political punching bag? Like, I got a call from my sister in Australia, and she was like, do you know how easy it is to enrol to vote overseas? And I was like, what's brought this on? And it was the very day that Paul Henry had announced that he was joining ACT. So I guess, I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah. Well, this is everyone's message to actually make a note and go and update their enrolment. I work on turnout, voter turnout and voter enrolment, and I hadn't updated it actually. And I was talking to another professor and I was like, oh, no, I haven't even enrolled. So I went and updated my address. It took probably maybe a minute. As long as you've got your real me, you're all good. If you don't have your real me, it's probably easier to go and reset your real me than print out the form.
I'd agree.
Yeah, but you can also, like, fill out the form on the PDF and email it to them. There's all sorts of options there.
Yes.
You know, it's pretty easy. And you can enroll from overseas. It's just as long as you've been back in the last 3 years. Well, you can enroll from overseas even if you haven't been back in the last 3 years. But you've got to come back the last 3 years to be able to actually vote, although no one checks. You a lot of people just enroll at, like, their mum's address or whatever.
Fantastic tips. Hey, thank you so much, Lara. It's always a pleasure chatting politics with you. And that's about all the time we have here today, but we'll catch up with you next week.
Thank you. Enroll to vote, everyone.
Yes. Yeah, enroll to vote. It's so
Listen
easy.
Listen to Lara, everyone. Thanks, Lara. Ka kite.
Ka kite.
Ka kite.
You just heard a bit of political commentary.